I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on, what is the day, the 5th of...
5th of February.
Yeah. Huh. Time marches on.
It seems that no way to slow it down. And you know what they say, seriously, and you know this more than I do, but it is true as you get older that the days go by faster. I mean, you know, you're in kindergarten, you're in high school, you're whatever. I mean, it was like forever. Now it's like, before I turn around, it's Friday again.
Yeah, if you were in kindergarten now, you'd be...
I'd be big. Let's talk about a lot of things that are going on here. You know, earnings season is kind of off and running, and probably a good majority of the S&P 500 companies have already reported. So most of them kind of okay on EPS, and you know, revenue has been coming in a little bit shy. But what's really interesting is that we all focus, and we've talked about this, but we all focus on beating analyst estimates. What we really should be focusing on is how the companies have done compared to their past, you know, how they're progressing. But yet, as investors, we seem to look at the estimates, and whatever the estimates are, if they beat, that's great. So there's been a lot of companies that have really had lowered earnings by a significant amount on a year-over-year basis. You always look at a year-over-year. And they're beating estimates, and the stocks are flying higher. So if you kind of take that picture and think about it for a second, what's happening is their earnings are going down, the revenues are going down on a year-over-year basis, but their stocks have been, you know, moving much higher. What does that say?
Well, I don't know. What does it say?
I mean, I think it says that, you know, people are looking for reasons to buy right now. So what happens is you have a PE expansion, and what that really means is that sentiment is better. People are willing to pay a little bit more for stocks, whether they think the value's there or they're being pushed into it because there's no other place to invest. I mean, you can't get a CD. You know,
no.
Bonds are lousy.
So when did – do you remember when you first started out – when was it so – it's over the last, I guess, 20 years, you know, people talk about these analyst predictions and they beat the street, they beat earnings, and, you know, they said one thing and did another and it made a big difference. When did that become so important? Because when I was a little kid, I don't remember that.
Well, that's because the information wasn't as easily, you know, projected. So you had to get the analyst estimate, you had to know what it was, and then the news would be, you know, till the company came out with it, it wouldn't spread as fast. They wouldn't report everything on the radio or the TV. So it was a kind of a different transmission mechanism of getting the information. Now we all know what it is. It's easy to see. The problem is that every company has a kind of a different way of reporting things. There's no real absolute standard. Some companies you look at EBITDA. Some companies you look at EPS. Some companies you look at EPS. You got to take out certain add backs or take outs. And, you know, just look at Amazon as a key example of this, that they missed. They missed on revenues, and yet at the same time, they beat on revenues. Pardon me, they beat on revenues and missed on EPS, guided down. But miraculously, it seemed that everybody was looking at their revenue growth and their gross margins.
Right,
and that was all of a sudden. You know, the stock moved up 8% on that in the after hours, and I was sitting there going, "I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense. Why are we just looking for a reason?" And we're seeing that a lot. We're seeing a lot of those things happen, and. I don't know how long that lasts. I've seen this before, this kind of phenomena where, you know, it just doesn't matter. As long as the word earnings comes out and it's not something miserable, they'll keep a stock at the certain level or they'll, you know, move it up. But in the real world, in a fantasy world possibly, in a perfect world, what we should be doing is looking at the comparisons of what companies are doing and how they're growing and put in analyst estimates because that's what the stock should have done up until the time of earnings, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're kind of like looking at what everybody thinks is going to happen and all these gurus. So we kind of bid the stock to the right level. And then if they don't meet it and they guide down, I don't see where the opportunity is to buy that stock.
Right. Yeah, but, there isn't any or right. Shouldn't be.
So what ends up happening is when that correction happens, there's always a correction, whether it's shallow or deep. But when things get a little shaky, some of those companies are the ones to go first. Those companies start moving down first.
Well, if the market continues to its upward trend, it'll happen, I think, before the end of the year.
There's just a lot of money in the market. Look what's happening with Japan. Japan's up another 3% tonight as we speak. And why? Because one of the central bankers that or the central banker, the main central banker that's there now, who is going to be eventually leaving, and a lot of speculation about further monetary stimulus and intervention to push the yen down, which is now at 93. I don't know where it was last week. We wouldn't talk. Maybe 91?
It was... Oh, that's a good question. I kind of remember, but I don't know if it was even that high. I think it was more like 80, in the high 80s. Could be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then now it's starting to get...
We're talking about how...
Yeah, we're talking about how it should be hitting 100 shortly, 100,
right,
which would be nice.
Right, exactly. And so what happens is that the stock market there is so incredibly focused on the yen because they have so many exports. Now what's happening is, 17, 18, or 19% rise in the yen from the low. The stock market is really acting very favorably towards it, and many of the companies like a Toyota or...
Toyota.
The exporters are guiding higher. Well, duh. You have a 17% benefit on your currency. I hope that your profits will benefit.
Yeah.
So now what's really interesting, John, is this. So now there's these currency wars going on, as I see it, which is a form of protectionism, right?
Absolutely.
But we don't say that. Everything's quiet. Can you imagine if China moved their currency lower? We'd have, the letter in the pocket from Congress again, making the rounds. But Japan moves their currency, and what does that happen? So now the U.S. currency is kind of stable and moves up a little bit. The euro's definitely been moving up on the sell of the Japanese yen. But yet we're seeing things in Asia, like the Korean won is starting to move up. And their stock market moved down on that. And what's really interesting now is speculation that Korea is going to have to intervene to bring their currency down to make them more competitive, which is a huge no-no.
Yeah.
If one's doing it...
Well, the Koreans are mostly competing with the Japanese, with their cars, mm-hmm. for example, and so they can't let the Jap... Because to be honest about it, I like the designs of the Hyundai, for example, but if I had a choice between a Hyundai, which I have rented, and a Toyota, I'd take... The Toyota just makes a better product.
My son has a Hyundai Genesis Coupe. Nice car, small, but good for him. I've been in that new Hyundai, that what do they call that one? It's not the Genesis, it's the other one. It's like, it has a recliner in the back seat, it has a little TV thing in the back seat. I think it's a little cooler back there. It's a very cool car.
Yeah,
it's
it's cool.
$85,000 though.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's still the same gutless wonder as all the other Hyundais. That's the problem I have with them.
I remember the early days of Hyundai, remember that? Remember those crappy cars they built?
Yeah.
It was like $2,000 for a car. It was like
price
made
was
out
right.
of tinfoil. Yeah, exactly. It's like the Tata. So this is a big issue right now that I think is front and center. But what are the ripple effects? So we see that, again, Korea and other countries are starting to scratch their heads saying, hey, wait a minute, this is getting a little bit out of control. Stock market there is going up like crazy, even though that we don't see the return on the investment yet, but clearly with the currency dropping, we're going to see some benefit. There's no question. We also see things like oil continue to move higher. Gasoline prices are currently the highest on average today during the time of year that it is now than it ever has been in history.
Hmm.
Not just the highest it's been. We know that gas has been higher priced. That's usually in the summertime, right?
Yeah.
But for this time of year, which is, where are we? The middle of the winter, right? This is the highest price of gasoline on average. I think $3.55.
I didn't know that.
Or $3.56, locked in at about 17 cents up. Yep. So, you combine that with the payroll tax holiday going away. And while, nobody thinks anything's going to happen, just like, flashback a number of years ago when they were talking about how oil prices won't affect the pocketbook of individuals, this is going to have an effect on retail. And we're starting to see that show through on, certain retailers right now. Again, when things get a little soft in the market, just not going up one day a lot, it starts to peel back a little bit.
Well, we'll see. But might as well, while we're here, talk about the elephant in the room, which is Dell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a smart move by them?
No. I think Michael's trying to get out from under or something. I'm not sure. I've written about this over and over and here and there. And, they can't get their message across as to what they're doing, for starters. Everyone still calls them a PC maker, and they're trying not to be a PC maker, and they've been trying not to be a PC maker, or at least perceived as one, for at least 4 years, maybe.
Which, by the way, can't help their PC sales. Right.
I don't know that it helps or hinders it, because everyone still sees them as a PC maker.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But if they're trying not to bring the image that they are a PC maker,
they have no control over it. So I don't think it's hurting them. Mm. At least it's not hurting their PC sales, but it's hurting their stock price, because they want to be perceived as something else, and they should have a different business model. And people are looking at them as a PC maker. And it appears as if they can't change the tide, and so they're going to go private, reorganize the company. I believe they'll come out of this and probably reissue their company, but it'll be a different name and everything. I think Dell's going to pull his name away. It's going to be a few years from now.
You think the problem is that one of the things they were trying to be was more like HP?
No, they were trying – not more like. They were trying to be HP and IBM.
Right. What I'm saying is, so they're trying to be HP, which is basically a failed model. I mean, they were chasing the loser in the batch.
I know that's the great irony.
Yeah. So they're going private. They're being bought for, I think, $23.75 per share. No, 13.
No, 13. About $23 billion, I think. Yeah.
About $23.5 billion, right? And they're going to be taken private. And now we'll see what they can do. Now, one of the reasons. This is why people and companies go private as well. Maybe the owner can cash out, maybe, without really kind of messing around with the stock.
I can't quite figure out if he's trying to cash out. I mean, it seems to me that he is. But
he's putting a lot of money into this deal.
Yeah, which makes no sense. If you're going to cash out, you don't buy into the new product.
Well, who knows if he's going to buy
in. And Gates, I guess, is buying. Yeah, it could be bullcrap, too. Yep. Microsoft is picking up some of it.
Yep, which is a problem, by the way. You know, Microsoft putting money into one PC company, kind of the other PC company is like, hey, what's going on? You know, why are you favoring them over us? I mean, is Dell going to go private and then kind of be the back door for Microsoft's hardware?
I think so.
Kind of under the radar kind of thing?
It's not going to be that under the radar.
Yeah.
No, I believe that's going to happen. I believe they're going to be using Dell as their OEM supplier with the branded Microsoft products.
That's interesting. That's actually a good deal.
It's for the stores. Microsoft's got all these stores, and they're trying to
another five just pop. Now for I'm saying for $23 billion. If there's even, why would Microsoft buy them? I mean, if they could have done
they're
it
only
on
getting 10% or something like that, they're not buying them.
Why not buy them? You could do it as
I see. What you're saying. I think that. Well, I think it's like, I honestly believe it's like, if you can get the milk for free, why buy the cow?
Yeah, I guess.
And so Microsoft doesn't have to buy them. They can keep their money, buy something stupid, and they're good to go.
That's more in line with what they do.
Yeah. They did with Facebook. They got a piece of Facebook.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's going to turn out okay for them potentially. I mean, they got it early on, so they got a nice profit on the deal.
Yeah.
So that's good. But, yeah, I do agree that, I mean, one of the big reasons is that a company goes private because they want to be out of the limelight, out of the specter of the public and on the scrutiny of every nickel and dime they spend and what management does. So it gives them a chance to breathe a little bit. And then oftentimes, you're right, we do see them come back public when they've kind of cleaned up things behind the scenes. But we'll see. I mean, this is, this is also the firm that bought them. Kind of is not just like a private consortium per se, private equity, but a lot of times they want to package this up to resell it eventually. So we'll see what happens. Now, HP came out tonight after the close. There was an announcement, at least a news item, that HP was considering breaking themselves apart, obviously for the benefit of, the parts are worth more than the whole.
They've done this a couple of times already.
Stock went up 11%, and then HP came out and said, no, we have no intention of splitting up any of the company. Kind of reminds me of Europe a little bit. And the stock came all the way back down.
I think I'd like to see what would happen to this Microsoft stock if they announced something like this. They said, we're going to break it up into four companies, which is a logical thing to do. In fact, you can all kind of promote the idea of breaking it up into five companies. But let's just say they said something like this. I bet you that stock would skyrocket.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, because it's very difficult. They're, even though they're technology, it's like a GE. There's so many different businesses that they're in, right?
Yeah.
it's very hard to discern what's doing what really benefited and how it's going.
Yeah,
and
why do they have a jet engine business? It's jet engine. I don't get the connection. GE, General Electric Jet Engines. I mean, that's one of their biggest money makers.
Right. Wind farms?
They got all kinds of, they got their fingers in everything.
In everything.
Network, yeah. They own part of NBC still.
Mm-hmm.
Which has nothing to do with that. Oh, that's probably a good investment that keeps people from doing investigative work on the company. Seriously, I mean, that's the only reason these big companies. I mean, let's take a look at the media. You've got Disney runs ABC. You've got Viacom in cahoots with Westinghouse running CBS. You've got NBC run by cable Comcast and.
Yeah, Microsoft for a while was running.
Well, they had that one channel, right? Yeah, so I mean, these big companies, they won't mess with each other. So they don't do investigations of each other. We don't have a clue about how what the Disney labor practices are, and we'll never find out. These networks do the public no good whatsoever.
Right. Now, speaking about Disney, this is another example. Disney came out tonight with fiscal first quarter earnings, which were down 5.5% compared to the 1 year ago number. They did, report a little bit better than analysts expected. The lower profits were due to its studio business. And what do you think the stock did?
Skyrocketed.
Yeah, it went up 1.5%. But, this is kind of the tail of the tape. Like I said, you know, as long as nothing like horrible happens, I mean, even just terrible. Although I've seen some terrible things happen and stocks still go up. But nonetheless, you know, this is kind of the tale. It's like everybody's like in advance of it. They're worried that what's going to happen. Maybe take a big tick down initially just because people are just selling out real quick and it's thin in the after hours. Then they just run it back up. You know, and who knows if it's also the big holders who are kind of like playing a game where the stock drops, they buy it because they know they own a big piece of it. And they don't want to get rid of it, and they don't want it to. And then the next day they say, well, we're going to keep buying it, hold it up. And then by then it's all forgotten.
Yeah, doesn't take long.
You know, and then we're on to the next thing. And what happens there is that, you know, at least the public is fooled.
That's the whole idea, is to fool the public.
Right, and then you can bleed your shares out over time.
Yeah, let the public take the bath. It's right. Very common. What else is new?
Yep.
So exactly. on your rundown here, you've got Chipotle.
Yep, Chipotle. So they came out with earnings tonight. They came out with earnings. They did much better than anticipated. There's a big concern about Chipotle and about some of these restaurants. Panera came out tonight also. And the big concern is that, number one, well, people aren't going to spend as much money. Number two, food prices are higher. Number three, if they didn't adjust their menu prices to the food prices, it's going to be a problem. Now, Chipotle has been very stern and very absolute about them not wanting to change and increase their menu prices. They've been, you know, saying this for a while. And that's what's been some of the downfall of their stock. I mean, stock really fell hard after the last earnings. They said, you know what, we're not increasing our menu prices. Everybody's like, wait a minute. Food prices are going up. This is going up. And you're not increasing your menu prices. How does that work?
Well, you know,
so they stuck with that again.
Well, there's other ways of dealing with it. You give them a little less portions allotment. You can short the customer. So they were built. The only reason I wanted to talk about this, they're building a new Chipotle, Chipotle. That's the way I think it should be pronounced, in a nearby town. There's already one in on the same street about, I guess, a mile and a half away.
Wow.
But this one's the new style. This is, and it's very different looking than the ones that I've seen before. And I wonder if they're going on a tear to just throw these things up everywhere. If people are looking for Mexican food of this sort. I've never eaten at one of these places. I guess I should check it out.
Excellent. Excellent, by the way. Really good.
Well, you're in Florida.
Oh, well, I don't have the alternative Mexican food that you have in whether it's Texas, Mexico, or California. But it's good for what it is, I think.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to find out by going to one of these things and having whatever they serve there. I don't know. Burritos?
You can get burritos,
tacos,
salads,
anything?
Yep, exactly. I mean, I get a like a salad with chicken in it, and then they put all sorts of junk in it and great spicy hot sauces. I like guacamole. You know, it's a good quick lunch.
Yeah.
And what's really nice about it is they have an app where you just kind of click the buttons and boom, and you show up at the store. There's always a line in those stores. You just grab your bag and go.
Well, let's take a look at the Chipotle menu. There's a Chipotle menu online. And, of course, it's taking forever to load. There it is.
There's beef, there's pork, there's
It's got like a
chicken.
Logo. The logo looks like a Starbucks logo now. Mm-hmm. Round. Oh, with a...
And that was probably cost $500,000.
At least. So they got burritos. They got a burrito bowl, crispy tacos, soft tacos, salad, and chips and guac. It says guac.
Oh, that's cool.
So let's see what the burrito menu looks like. I can't say much for this site being snappy. Yeah, nothing.
Nothing?
No, nothing. I think maybe this is all it is. Just, there is no menu. It just says burritos. Flour tortilla, choice of cilantro lime rice, pinto or vegetarian black beans, meat, which includes carnitas or barbacoa, or adobo marinated, and grilled chicken or steak. Okay, it sounds like a pretty standard kind of mission-style burrito.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The burrito bowl is the same thing, only it doesn't have the burrito around it or the skin. Crispy tacos. Crispy is a way of life. These things, dude, I wish they had the prices on here. I'm sure these are really overpriced, these tacos. Anyway, okay, I'll check it out.
Not as good as a Jack the Box taco.
Oh, please. Jack
in
the Box.
Like Jack the Box tacos?
Mm.
That's a late night kind of thing after a couple drinks. Yeah.
So this is the three. Don't worry, there's more soft tacos. These soft tacos look like the taco shell is... It looks like it's flour, which is a problem.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's dumb.
I think you can get corn, but I think the base one is flour.
Yeah, and it doesn't even look like it's heated up. Yeah, okay, I'll check it out. This looks pretty Americanized.
Oh, it definitely is. They've also opened up some Asian restaurants. I think they're trying to compete with Payway, and they're trying some other concepts.
Compete with who?
Right now, so. We actually own Nakka. We bought it Payway.
Compete with Payway?
Yeah.
What's Payway?
They are the, I'm trying to think what the other name of the other thing is. The other, you know, the high-end Chinese place, the chain.
Panda? Panda Express?
No, that's not high-end. That's a mall thing.
I don't know of any high-end.
Yeah, there's a bunch of these things. I don't like them. They're too much salt. They always serve in it. But anyway, they have these kind of like faster food things. You go up, you get a sit-down at a table, you number in the thing, and they bring you the food. And you get all sorts of Chinese or Asian foods there. It's good. I mean, for, you know, a quick meal. Anyway, I want to mention also that I just forgot what I was going to mention here. We'll talk about – oh, so I want to talk about Chipotle. So we owned it at about 273 when it dropped all the way down. And actually, after the earnings tonight, it went up to about 3 – I think it went up to about 314. Mm-hmm. Then it started to drop back. We had to stop in and sold it at about 310 because, you know, the numbers were good. But again, that menu price thing was bothering me that they were so, you know, stiff about that. But Shutterfly, you know, any of you use Shutterfly?
No.
Ah, good service. They did a good job at raising
– What do you use it for?
Pictures, photos.
What about them?
Well, you upload real quickly, and you could get print for like 2 cents a piece.
Just print on your own little printer.
Yeah, you could do that, or you can get mugs, and you get actually have photo books that are really cool.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people are doing the photo books.
Yeah, photo books are great. Shutterfly photo books are awesome. Anyway, they got a little bit lower, but stock was up like 14 to 15% after hours. There's a big old interesting positioning on that. A couple of things I want to tell you about that are really interesting. Let's see. Okay, so here's something. We'll talk about this as we're talking about stocks. The U.S. government is now suing McGraw-Hill, which is the owner of Standard & Poor's.
Oh, yeah. This is great.
This is great.
Yeah.
Because they're knowingly rating bonds back in the 2000s with, you know, like a AAA when they were real crap.
Right.
And, you know, the stock has plunged over the last couple of days.
Now,
we're
really?
Talking how many years? We're talking about, what, 4 years, 5 years here since it all occurred, and they're now trying to make a case about this. And at the same time, don't forget that many countries are trying to outlaw rating agencies because the rating agencies gave them too low of a rating.
Right.
At the same time.
I know, it's good.
And here's – before we get to this discussion, but here's the irony and the interesting kind of placement of this. Don't forget, at the end of this month, this is the time when the automatic spending cuts go into place and, you know, defense cuts get whacked and they got to come up with something potentially for this the real fiscal cliff that was happening that they postponed a few months. And already many of these companies have said, you know, listen, if you postpone this, kick the can down the road and maybe just keep building your debt, we're going to maybe put you maybe on negative watch or concerned about your debt rating, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks now until this kind of comes down a bit. And right in between, a shot is fired by the U.S. government to sue Standard & Poor's, looking for upwards of potentially $5 billion on this thing. So I think it was a combination of an interesting timing warning to them, because they could have done this a lot earlier.
Yeah, I would think.
Could have done this like 3 years ago.
So this is owned by MHP, right? The McGraw-Hill Companies?
Yeah, I put a chart there for
4492. I'm actually looking at one of the charts right now.
I want you to look at my chart, because I kind of put something on there for you that's interesting.
Okay, let me go find it.
So we look at these key levels of supply and demand, support, resistance, from not just a price standpoint, but also a volume standpoint. I kind of made it a very easy look here for you. And what you're seeing here is McGraw-Hill was at about, 58, give or take, 58, 3 days ago. And today it's 44 and change.
Yeah, that was a good drop.
Yeah, really nice drop.
It was doing a nice climb starting in June.
Yeah. And then it just got kerplunked. Now, you notice those lines I drew, the red and the green and the red?
Right, you got lines and circles and dotted lines and blue lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can't give them facts. Wow them with color. So here's the thing. See, I circled that those three lines that are consecutive across, right?
Right. The red to green to red.
Right. Now, those lines, what we're looking at is a chart of the stock. But what's more important is that we're looking at the support from different times in the past, you know, over time, back to 2011. And what's really interesting is that we see these three lines that now connect, right? So we're seeing three lines of supporting areas that are from what date? Let's think. November of 2012 back to December of 2011. So like a year's worth of support zone.
Right.
That's a pretty hefty, that's a long zone.
Yeah.
Okay? And look where the stock ended, hit down to this today, the low.
Right. It bounced right off the support.
Right. So here's my thesis on this. First of all, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the other rating agencies, whether it's Moody's or Fitch, and supposedly, you know, nobody else has received anything yet. But if history is any guide, the government is a real wimp when it comes to follow through on any of this, and a very difficult time proving any of their points. As we know, no banker has gone to jail, and basically everybody's still intact, right?
Yeah.
So this kind of scare, I said, you know, it's a very risky play. It's a falling knife, no question. So we just nipped at it a little bit today because of the, you know, extraordinary downtrend and everybody's bailing ship on this thing. And if the worst doesn't happen to this company, don't forget, they're not just one thing. They have a lot of other things and books and all that.
Yeah, no, I'm in on this one. I'm putting this on the chart.
Okay, well, on our weekly, well, we'll have to do a purple.
Oh, you're in too.
So, I think you have to look at this now just to further this conversation for 1 second. If you do fall below, you still have a little bit of support there at about, 42.50. And then you start getting a little shaky. See below that? You know, below 40, it's all over.
Yeah. But there's no reason for the stock to be going down like this except for this threat.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this could drag out for a long time, so there's going to be some overhang here. But I wouldn't be surprised if some value players step in here and they start like trying to pick up some shares and, you know, bring the shares up to about, let's just say, anywhere to 47 to 50. That's a wide range. But 47 to 50, that's kind of where you have a little bit of about 51 really is where you have that really hard resistance again. So I think that this is interesting that you're going to probably see, you know, a continuation of extreme volatility here. But, you know, it may be worth kind of starting to think about just nipping at it. That's all. Just thinking about it. The other thing I want to mention is that another chart I want to bring up, but the economy. So one of the things that you look at is back to this whole analyst expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where did the analysts see things going? Where is the average analyst say that the jobs number is going to be, the unemployment rate is going to be? You know, where they think that the ISM non-manufacturing number, whatever, you know, all the different things that we see constantly about the economy. And then what we do is we can take a look at that and then see what the real numbers are and kind of plot that, right? Makes sense? Look where they are. Take a look at the next chart, which is the Citibank Economic Surprise Index. And I took this back a number of years, and I offset it a little bit also because it kind of correlates a bit better when you kind of push it back a little bit, because oftentimes markets will run ahead or behind this, right? Because you don't really know how the trend is going to go. One surprise, two surprises to the downside or the upside does not make a trend.
What does this mean, though? This is the United States.
Hey, I'm going to tell you. So this is the economics that have been announced by the United States. You know, all the different numbers taken together.
That's the blue line.
That is the blue line. Well, the blue line is the surprise. How much the surprise has been to the positive.
But that's what I'm going to. Okay. Oh, so there's some ratio because, is it a good surprise or a bad surprise?
Yeah, exactly. It's either good or bad. And bad means you go down.
Yeah, but the surprise line, what does the surprise line itself represent?
It's the total of surprises on a moving average.
A total of good surprises or a total of bad surprises or a total of all surprises?
Well, there's a zero line there. See the zero line there to the left?
Yeah.
The left. Okay, well, above zero is a positive surprise.
Okay.
And depending on how much of a positive surprise it is, and a negative surprise is below zero.
So why would the market be collapsing the S&P 500 according to this thing? There's a positive surprise in February, March, April, whenever it is, or mid-June, I don't know where that is, in 2008. And as you get the surprise thing going up, it crosses over as the other thing's going down.
Well, actually, the surprise index was a bit in front of it. Now, all of a sudden, what happened, if you kind of read it this way. So over time, starting in February 2008, right, there was some things that really got a lot better, and the markets kind of stabilized a bit or whatever. And then what happened is, because don't forget, before that, it was really bad also. And then analysts oftentimes are behind the curve, and they just start saying, oh, we better catch up here. We better, you know, we see some better numbers coming out. We better raise our estimates across the board. And what often happens is they do that at the wrong time. Then what happens is all of a sudden we see the economic surprise index plunge, meaning there's just a terrible amount of differential between what analysts are saying and what the actual numbers come out. And you see what happens to the market, right? It comes down sharply. And then all of a sudden analysts are like, well, wait a minute. Maybe we were too optimistic. So we're going to cut back on our estimates.
I don't know. You know, looking at it from February 2011 to the current thing, it's up and down and up and down. Market looks pretty stable. This doesn't look like anything that is useful. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, are people using this? Oh my God, this is going up and down.
From a trend standpoint, what you have to look at is when the trend sharply moves in one direction or the other. For the most part, you're going to see a little bit of a lag, and then the markets kind of come into that. Now, right now, what you have, which the big difference right now is, well, between about 08 and now, is the Fed keeps on supporting the markets. And, you know, even though you have bad news, people are like, oh, the worst news, maybe the Fed will step in. Oh, it's good news. Okay, well, the Fed may be there, but we'll buy stocks anyway. But there is a definite trend here when you do see very sharp rollovers, and markets usually will follow. And when they don't, you'll often find that there'll be a time when they do start to follow if the trend continues down on the economic surprise index.
Okay.
All it's saying is this, very simple, that if in fact analysts are predicting one thing and the economics go up or down in either direction, very dramatically the other way, there is obviously a lot of thought about where the economy was that was incorrect. That's all it's saying. Just like earnings. Same discussion as earnings. If you don't like it, we'll move on.
I don't like it.
All right, moving on.
It just doesn't look right. I mean, it doesn't look like anything. It just looks like it's random.
Okay.
Anyway.
Would you at least think that the economic surprises should have some meaning?
I'll hold that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see here. We saw that there was trouble in Euroville again yesterday. It seems that Spain is having all sorts of political problems. I guess Berlusconi is trying to come back in Italy again. I don't know how that's possible. Got thrown
Berlusconi.
Out, yeah, Berlusconi, Berlusconi. Is that the same as the same spelling as the tomato sauce?
Berlusconi. I know there is some sort of a tomato sauce. There's Bertoli. There might be something that's like that. It's possible.
Well, it seems to be that there is all sorts of discontent now. Rajoy over in is it Ranjoy or Rajoy? Now I'm kind of butchering all these names. Anyway, in Spain is up on all sorts of allegations of wrongdoing, of some kind of taking money for this and that. And that kind of the Spanish market has just collapsed in the last few days. I mean, probably off 8% in the last 4 or 5 days. today was a good day. The euro dropped off a cliff yesterday out of nowhere, and that's why markets kind of came in also with the whole jitter about the European situation again. And so, you know, of course, today we'd wake up and everything's fine. So, you know, good night's sleep always helps, I guess.
$1.35.
Yeah. And kind of holding, which is interesting. I mean, it was $1.37 2 days ago.
It's way too high.
$1.37.
These guys are crazy.
What do you think about the Super Bowl? Did you watch it?
Yeah, of course. What do you think I watched? Of course I watched it. It's a local team.
And, well, they lost, but...
They lost. The first 49er team to ever lose the Super Bowl. They sucked. They choked. The defense was no good. This great 49er defense. What happened?
You're not going to blame it on the lights?
Oh, the lights. When the lights went out and they got back to work, they were starting to win the game again. So,
what was the story? What was the end story with the lights?
That there's no explanation, and here's the curious element to that. Apparently, there was actually a bet that was wagered in Las Vegas that the lights would go out.
Oh, get out of here! Really?
That could be folklore. It might be full of crap. I didn't see it exactly, but I've been told this.
Wow! Somebody lost a bundle. Those odds must have been way up there.
Yeah, I would think.
So Beyonce was pretty.
But she, Beyonce, I don't know.
I thought the little routine she did was kind of good. I mean, she got a little chunky there, I thought.
No, she's always had those big, giant thunder thighs. Mm. She's very athletic.
You didn't like the halftime show? You like the Bruce Springsteen?
What?
I thought Bruce Springsteen was better. Wasn't Bruce Springsteen last year?
I don't even care. These halftime shows...
Who? Maybe it was the Who.
I thought it was Madonna. I don't know. All I know is that these halftime shows are... I don't care for them.
What about the commercials? I didn't find anything that was that great.
I thought they were all violent and weird. And then there was the creepy one with the kid, the young kid, the underage kid with the fat face kissing that model. I thought that was kind of perverted.
And that they pulled the SodaStream ads, that ones that directly slammed Coca-Cola, or not directly slammed, but at least poked fun at Coca-Cola and Pepsi. They wouldn't let the SodaStream commercial on?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There was a few that were on, but some of them were banned, saying, you know what, we do not want advertisers, you know, whacking each other.
Well, they also banned the Beyonce finale, where she drives off in a brand new 2014 Corvette.
Why'd they do that?
Because General Motors refused to buy an ad during the event.
Oh, people looked down on it because the government bailed them out?
No, it's because they didn't pony up. That's the reason. This whole thing is corrupt. It's a corrupt operation as we speak.
What's with all the car commercials during Super Bowl? It's heavily weighted towards car commercials.
I thought it was heavily weighted toward that new beer from Budweiser.
Well, they're always there going doing their thing. Yeah. Yeah, there was nothing I thought. I mean, there's been some years that I was not at all like, wow, this is a great commercial. Except everybody was waiting for the GoDaddy commercial, and I do agree with you. It was rather disgusting.
Yeah, totally.
It was kind of creepy disgusting.
Do you want to see a bunch of girls in bikinis, or do you want to watch this? I mean, I think it was like the challenge, you know?
I don't know.
And then they went on forever, this tonguing each other, this girl and this guy giving each other the tongue. Ugh. It was horrible.
It's like a fat, freckly...
Yeah, some fat, fat kid.
I mean, I'm sure it was great for him. He got paid for that.
Oh, yeah, the kid made out. Got to kiss his pretty girl and got paid.
Yeah, that's kind of the deal. I guess maybe they were, you know, they were appealing to geeks that, you know, GoDaddy geeks and, you know, that this is possible for anybody. I don't know. I don't know what
any geek knows that GoDaddy's not your best deal out there.
Right. Correct. Yep. It's going to be a temporary budget, it looks like. That's what Obama is now hoping for, that they will have a, instead of this big cut that's going to be happening in March, just let's do a temporary budget. Now, you know that Congress has not passed a budget in, how long is it?
1997.
Is it 1997?
Yeah, they passed one in 97.
Wow.
Or 96. It hasn't been since, 97.
Hmm. Now, let's not get into this discussion, because I know that it's illegal not to do that and all that, but nobody cares, so let's just move on. I mean, I don't get the point of that whole thing. Stock inflows into ETFs and mutual funds were pretty robust in January. This is interesting because we do see this oftentimes on the quarter, because you see a rebalancing of 401k plans, money in, and all sorts of things happen. Oftentimes in the beginning of the year also you see this, that there's new money in because plan starts, plan changes, particularly in the pension area. But this January, there was clearly a much better move into stocks. One of the things that we saw the last 2 years or so has been that very little flow into stock funds. So there's either a couple things here. Either people are starting to believe in the market, and that's what you get the stock inflows from in ETFs and mutual funds. That's one possibility, which is good. That's interesting. You know, people are starting to think that things are better. They're not as worried. The other side, you know, of the coin, the bear argument is, hey, you know what? Just like clockwork, retail's back in at the high. So I'm not sure what to make of that. You know, I know that there's a kind of a Goldilocks situation going on here now with the Fed pushing the pedal and Japan pushing the pedal and China's economy's getting a little bit better. And I don't know. Any thoughts on the whole January money?
No, not really. I'm looking at one of my indicators right now, International Rectifier.
Yeah.
And I see that it is starting to move up with alacrity.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's actually when people start recommending it as a stock to buy.
Yes.
That's when you know the market's over. So, I think we're going to have a good little run-up. Hopefully it gets to 15,000. Maybe I would be great if it got to like 20,000 because then it would have an impact when it crashed.
Just as a quick side note for anybody, if you're like wondering, how do I follow International Rectifier? I can go to this website. I can go there. You know, one of the things you could do is you can do a Google alert.
Yeah.
And you can put in just kind of look this up. You can figure this out. You can just put – everybody puts their own name in. So if you ever mentioned on the web through a Google search, they'll find it and they'll just send you an email saying, hey, it was mentioned here. Give you the link and some of the article that was written. But you could say something like International Rectifier Upgrade. And every time that Google sweeps the web, which is quite often, and they find that word search, what's going to happen is they're going to send you an automated email. That's pretty cool.
I like that.
Yeah. So you can do that in your Google Alerts. Set up tons of them for all sorts of things if you feel compelled to get all these emails or just wrap them up into
one. Well, you can set them to one specific box and look at them when you feel like it.
Exactly. Couple more things. No doubt payments for houses is back.
Oh.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Yep. No down payments are back, and there is this kind of, you know, kind of we've seen the housing market get stabilized plus to the plus side. Now, remember something, that all the new houses that are being built and all the big excitement that's being, you know, talked about, if you look at a long-term chart, it's still a pathetic level. But the builders have caught on to the fact that they need to trim out and be lean and mean and kind of not have all this fat and excess and really be careful on their, you know, how many people they're hiring and the house they're building. So, you know, these builders are doing very well. As a matter of fact, I found this really interesting. So we have this a couple different screens that we work with, a few of them actually. But the main one, which we call our core screen, looks for very, very robust earnings growth over the last number of years and quarter by quarter. Looks for margin expansion. It looks for all sorts of things that would be, you would say, more of your growth stocks. You know, more of the stocks. You're not going to find utilities in there ever. Okay? I think two or three home builders just hit the list, and I haven't seen them in there in years.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, whoa. Lennar hit, Meritage Homes, and I think that was the two. There may have been one more.
Well, the market for house, new houses did crash completely, so there should be a run-up of some sort. What is the best of those operations?
I mean, Lennar's a great firm.
Lennar, what's the symbol?
L-E-N. L-E-N. Really good firm. You know, the KB is a kind of a second tier. Pulte's good. There's a few of them, but Lennar's is probably one of the best of what they do. They're building a lot of apartments now. They just took out some kind of huge amount. Just refinanced their debt again and just came out some new deal. It looked like they're going into Asia. It's crazy.
Apartments are the big thing right now. You know, the funny irony that's happened here in the Bay Area. And by the way, Buffett said that if he was investing scratch right now, he'd invest in apartments. So we have all these millionaires from Facebook, tons of them, and they're all in San Francisco mostly. And none of them bought property. They all rent these very expensive apartments. Just throw the money away.
Well, why?
Well, you broke
up. They do that because of the mobility of it, the easy access out. They're in it for the mobility, for the easy.
They're stuck at Facebook forever. They're never good. There's no mobility. You know, besides that,
they could just leave.
Yeah, they could leave, but they're not going to be leaving. I mean, yeah, I suppose if you really feel you're going to be moving out, you know, you're still, it's analyzed as, you know, you're still in college. So you just rent someplace and then you move someplace else, I mean, eventually. Maybe that's what they're doing, but it seems, I don't think so.
So what's the appeal to rent then? I mean, is it because?
Because they don't know any other way.
Oh, I see.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It's kind of old school to always be buying, you know, property.
I heard of some rents in New York recently down in the Lower East Side. You know, Lower East Side used to be this kind of, when I grew up there, it was kind of like, you don't want to go there, really. There's nothing going on.
Yeah, hellhole.
Yeah, it's totally different. It's the hop, happening place right now. And they rebuilt a lot of stuff. I mean, I know somebody that bought, like, I think it was, or rented, I think it's close to maybe 1,000 square feet, one bed, one bathroom, somehow three bedrooms. You know, they have a little kitchen, a little nook to eat at. They put a wall up to make a fourth bedroom. It's $5,400 a month. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, even paying.
You
even
can
paying,
buy some. You can build in Connecticut and just take the train in. Is it crazy to do that?
But that's what's doing. I mean, maybe it's a sign of maybe something that was. Maybe it's like the leftover from the Depression. Maybe some of these younger people who went through the last 5, 6, 7 years that are just getting to the job force and making money are just so petrified of buying a home and seeing what happened, you know, that they don't want that to happen to them. Who knows?
No, I think there's an element to that where people saw this housing crash and not thinking like a normal investor would, saying, "Ooh, it's crashed. Now I can get in cheap."
Right.
And just, you know, ride it up when it finally gets going. No, they just stay out, and then when it finally gets going and it's up again, they're going to be suckered into it at the top again. I mean, this is classic.
I don't understand the whole apartment thing. You know, if you start overbuilding apartments, don't we have problems there? I mean, what the idea of building massive amount of apartments with a population that's not growing, where are they coming from? They're coming from I don't really get it. Seriously, I don't really understand. I mean, is it the generation that's coming out of their parents' home and now living somewhere else, but yet those people, there's so many people that are living back at home now? That kind of X's out that concept.
Yeah.
It's not immigration, because that's not happening that much, although there is some immigration rules maybe coming. But again, our population is not growing. So who's living in all these apartments they're building?
Mm-hmm. Kids.
Is it people maybe moving from colder areas down to the Sun Belt? Is that happening?
I don't know. There's a magazine I should start reading it again called American Demographer. And it explains all these things, and I have been lax.
You should read
up.
That. I'm not going to read that. You should read that.
I will read it.
I need you to do research on this.
Okay, I'm going to read it.
So, I need to know why they're doing this. Go ahead.
So let's get to our stocks, because we're getting there.
Let's get to the stocks. Yep, this is a nice game that we play each and every week. We jazzied up and spiffied up the page where you can take a look at this. It's a Google spreadsheet where we just put the information in, and we've coded it all, so you pull all the data from Google Finance. You can do this yourself to track your own portfolio. It brings in all the live data from Google Finance about the stock price, and you can do things like all the fundamentals. But we track what we buy and sell. It even does conditional formatting, so when we put the word shorted, it automatically turns red. When the stock is up, it turns green, the profit line, and red at the other one. It's all sorts of cool stuff in there.
We're all green except for one.
Yeah. Yep.
So we're looking good so far this year.
Yep, we are. By the way, this is just a game. Do not use any of our discussion.
Right, and we don't even buy the. You might own, or somebody might own some of these stocks, but generally speaking, there is. If we own some, it wouldn't reflect the way we're doing this anyway, because this is done in a very rigid way. There's no number of shares, A.
Right.
And
yep.
B, there is a rule that if something moves 10% down, we're out. Automatically.
Our trailing stop at 10%. And then we also put, if there is a disclosure, we own it. For example, we talked about McGraw-Hill. McGraw-Hill clients bought that today. So we have that on the list as something that we bought. Apollo, for example, something that clients have. So let's go down the list. We have Apollo Group, which is the for-profit education, which is clearly those stocks have been in the dumps. And they just, you know, they have an overhang of public just disgust, I guess, because of the way they do things. And the government has been breathing down their necks. Live Nation, they do the concerts that you bought, and it's actually up 2.8% since a couple of weeks, what is it, beginning of the year. And they have actually been doing pretty good. Corning, a big bit of a disappointment. They came out, I believe, with earnings a couple of weeks back, but bought them. They were up a little bit, and now they're down about 4%. Amazon, I shorted last week. Close to the top, 283. It actually was down even more. Today it popped about 2.5%. It's up 5.6%. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. No, that's a good call.
Thank you. it's a tough one to call because Amazon, everybody just loves. You know, 3 days later, they forget about whatever. They just start buying it again. Went short corn, and we're up about 0.29%. Didn't think that was going to be a big win. Radio Shack, high short interest, and a company that has been pretty much left for dead, don't you think?
You know, I'm just looking. I keep looking at them saying, you know, they got – they've been left for dead, but I don't see any reason that they're dead. Seems to me that they can be I think Microsoft should just buy them and then move all their stuff into those places.
That's not a bad idea. You got the properties.
Yeah, they got the properties. They got good. They already have the location scoped out. Everybody goes to a Radio Shack once in a while.
Right.
And there's a guy behind the counter is the genius guy.
Right.
I mean, it could be a dead company or it could be something could be revitalized. I mean, sometimes you have to go get – you have to go to the Radio Shack to buy something. They have connectors or wires or something and you need it now.
Yeah. And it's always around somewhere and they're always open, it seems.
Yeah.
You shorted Yahoo on the earnings. We came out – the earnings came out and everybody was all excited about them. But then it was like, wait a second. What's going on here? You know, stock turned around and came down. You shorted them, so they're up 1.31% since I guess it was last week. So all in all, pretty good. You know, I mentioned that we did stop out of Herbalife.
Yeah, I saw that.
And Herbalife actually started coming down again. It was down. This is interesting about Herbalife. So there was an announcement yesterday that the FTC was doing some kind of inquiry of something or other, right? So the stock is off by 13% on the open. Okay, now we're short that stock. And we got it a bunch higher. And it was off 13%. Now I'm watching the stock and the rumors and the things and all that, and we know that there's a big argument between this hedge fund and that hedge fund and all that. So, you know, it's down 13% and starts ever so slightly creeping higher. Just creeping higher. Down market yesterday, creeping higher. I said, you know what? I'm going to put a stop in here. If this thing goes above, it's done. Over. You know, kind of above the – I'm going to start moving above 12% up because there was a kind of a support level there. And by golly, it hit, and you know what? It was up by the end of the day.
Wow.
Because they came out, because Herbalife is very much, they got their antennas up. Oh, no such thing. We're not aware of any inquiry. This is BS and all that. Now, I went on the FTC website, and there's about six or seven companies that are listed there as the highest complaints. You know, the companies with the highest complaints that are coming to the FTC.
Hmm.
And the top one, I don't know if it's in any kind of particular order, but the top one is two separate ones on Countrywide. Well, we could understand that, right?
Yeah.
Countrywide mortgage. Okay, we got that. And there's a couple other ones in there, but Herbalife is right in the middle.
Hmm.
So I kind of went through there, and there's a lot of customer complaints, and there's a request for paperwork, and a request for, you know, the FTC comes back and request. So there's something going on there. There's definitely something going on there. But, you know, we said, we'll take the profits. Tried to reshort it a little bit, and then it kind of started moving up again. I said, you know, we'll take it out. And it was up again today.
It's aggravating. I would avoid it. So
yeah, I agree. Made some nice money, but whatever. It's done. So we're going to do this one. We're going to turn to purple.
MHP.
Yeah, we're going to turn to that fancy shade of purple.
I'm going to buy Lennar, too.
You are?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I was looking at the chart. And I don't see that it's going to lose 10% anywhere on this. It's marching up.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, do you look at some of these companies like MHK, Mohawk Industries.
Yeah.
They make the flooring.
Hmm.
I mean, look at that chart. That chart's ridiculous.
Holy crap.
Over the last, like, you know, year or so. Just keeps on moving up.
That's a beauty. Right? Yeah, you wanted to buy that one back in May.
That one goes just nicely up.
It's just marching up. It does take big dips, though. Lennar doesn't seem to do that.
No, Lennar's just like vertical lately. It's just straight up. Let's see, the last 5 years, let's see. Yeah, I mean, even from 5 years ago. Oh, this is even long. When is this? This is back to 1980. What did I click? I clicked 5 years. That's more than...
You must have hit max.
I don't know what I did here. Okay, so yeah, but from 2008, it was as low as what? 10? And now it's 40. That's a four-bagger. That's not so bad, right?
No. Of course not.
Not bad at all. And then you got, what is another one? D.R. Horton, DHI, that's another one. I think that one's done pretty well, 5 years. Not as well, but it hasn't been as rocky either.
D.R. Horton, what do they do?
Yes, and Home Builder.
Hmm.
I think that's another one that's maybe on my list. That's the one. The other one I want to mention is that company, well, Medical Marijuana, M.
Oh, yeah, those guys. What was that again? M what?
Well, let's see. It's Medical Marijuana. It's MJNA.
MJNA. Yeah. Majana. So that 31 one cents, down 12 cents. It's way down.
Yeah, well, look where it was yesterday. It went to 4 cents from 2 cents in like 2 days.
Oh.
And what's that other one? The company that does the lockers for that? Med. Man, what's this called?
Holy crap.
I think it's called Medbox. Yeah, Medbox.
M-D-B-X. I should have been in medical marijuana. Wasn't I long on this thing?
Yes, you were. Look at this other one. This other one. Remember the one that spiked? This one's really fascinating. MDBX.
MDBX.
Remember that jump it took from, let's see, it went from, went from about $6 to $200 in about 4 days.
Yeah.
It came down a bit, no question about that. But look, it's still at $61.
Oh, man, that's a beauty. Yeah, sitting down there at $2, skyrocket, somebody knows something. And then it collapsed, but it only collapsed down to 40 from $2. And now it's sitting around 60, 61.50.
Yeah, it was just 70 a few days ago. Crazy.
What's going on with these guys?
They're initiated on February 4th. They initiate their responsible consumption campaign for marijuana. Medbox sees opportunity in a few new states. They advance the customer financing program.
Oh, God. And they sell the product in a baggie.
Yeah, they have some sort of secure. Actually, there's a couple of other things except for the marijuana. They have this interesting prescription delivery, which is secure. So that's kind of interesting, but clearly not at these prices. These prices are ridiculous.
Yeah, it's probably a good short.
It's a $1 billion company almost already.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Well, we have to take a look. We have to follow this. I think this medical marijuana thing or this whole marijuana thing is going to be a huge moneymaker for somebody, but it's going to end up being Philip Morris.
Yeah, probably. They got the whole thing down, right? And finally, take a look at just one more, your 3D printing.
Oh, yeah, DDD.
DDD, yep. We actually exited that position today, although after hours is up nicely. I don't know what that deal was. I got to look at that, but... Let's see. I'm trying to figure out how long this is. Let's take 1 year. Yeah, 1 year ago they were 15. Now they're 62.
Yeah,
and they rode up as high as 70 recently. Now it's kind of a lot of people talking about them being in a bubble at this point. They're kind of like they're really outside.
Yeah.
The PE's out of whack, and even though they have all these things, but
yeah, there's got to be a small up and coming player that's a better investment.
Yeah, Stratasys hasn't done as well. They've kind of, I don't know what the deal is with Stratasys. They don't seem to be doing as well. But there's a few of them in here. We'll see if like Hewlett Packard or Lexmark or, a Hitachi or somebody comes out with
one. Epson.
You think so?
No, they're a printing company and why not?
Yeah.
I'm sure they're working on one. I would be stunned if every printing company wasn't working on a 3D printer.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, we're about out of time here.
All right. We'll get back next week when the market's flying high.
14,800.
Yeah, could be. You might be surprised.
I hear you.
All right. Next Tuesday.
Okay, great. Look forward to it.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.